720 WGN, Pete McMurray in the Skyline Studios. The Syrian American Medical Society, the acronym is SAMS Foundation, is a global medical relief organization that is working on the front lines of crisis relief in Syria, in neighboring countries, and beyond to save lives. SAMS proudly provides medical care and treatment to every patient in need. And joining us in studio is Dr. Mufaddal Hamada.
Hamadi. Right.
Damn, I thought I had your name. You're Syrian,
almost,
I'm Lebanese. I almost had it. Yeah. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
I mean, you're doing God's work.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you.
Explain to people what you do. You're taking off tomorrow. You're going to Lebanon.
Correct. I'm going on my 9th or 10th mission, medical mission, this time to Lebanon. And I'm taking about 30 volunteers with me, mainly healthcare professionals. Most of them are from the Chicago area, and we are going to be performing life-saving procedures, particularly cardiac catheterization, stents. We have surgery. We have pulmonary with the bronchoscopies, and then we have a lot of primary care physicians that are going to go visit refugee camps and do some primary care work on some of the refugees out there.
How long have you been doing this? How many years?
You know, the SAMS is an organization that it's a professional organization that started in 1998. I can say I'm one of the founders of SAMS. But when the war started in Syria about 8 years ago, we, the Syrian American physicians, decided to do something. We couldn't just sit around and do nothing. And, we can see that 500,000 people died and almost 10 million people were, you know, became refugees either internally or externally.
Right.
So we decided that we're going to try to become a professional organization that lends humanitarian aid to the Syrian people. So we started with a budget in 2011 of $750,000, which was, you know, we were just a social club at that time. And now we turn to an NGO. In 2017, our peak budget was $42 million.
You're kidding.
Today, our budget is almost $35 million.
Wow.
Yeah. So we employ about 3,000 people inside Syria today, mainly physicians and nurses and healthcare professionals. We support over 40 healthcare institutions in the most difficult areas.
Doctor, where does all that money come from? Is it donations? Is it federal money?
We have private donations. The private donations at our peak time were about $14 million.
Okay.
This year we're talking about maybe $8 million. But most of that comes from U.S. government, AFTA, USAID, the State Department, and some European organizations, too.
Well, paint a picture for me. When you leave the United States, you, I mean, if you're going to Syria, you may not come back. Because do you think about that, or you just think, I'm going to work, I'm going to try to heal some people, I'm going to do all I can over there to save lives?
Well, you know, there are most of what I'm going to be doing now, it's in a refugee camp on the Syrian borders.
Okay.
So I'm going to be traveling to Lebanon with a bunch of guys at the Syrian borders. We're going to be treating the refugees inside Lebanon. And then I'm going to be traveling to the to Turkey, to the Turkish-Syrian borders. Also, I'm going to see some of the refugees that recently were actually had to flee the bombardment of the province of Idlib and go to the Syrian, to the refugees borders at the Turkish borders.
Have you ever been nervous for your life being over there?
You know, honestly, when I entered Syria, I mean, when I did that in the past, I don't really feel threatened, you know. I mean, you look around you, you see kids are living their lives, are going to schools, you see families and people living their lives. They learn to live with, you know, the fear of bombardment.
Right.
The fear of being, you know, targeted any time or killed. But there's no discrimination here between civilians and non-civilians. Everybody gets their fair share. As a matter of fact, most of the victims are not militants. 60% of the victims are women and children.
Civilians, right.
But when you're walking around there, you say, why would my life shouldn't be more precious than everybody else's? You lose your fear, actually. You lose it totally. Yeah, the one thing that you worry about sometimes is being kidnapped, you know, with some rogue elements.
I was just going to ask you that.
Yeah.
You have to be fearful of that, too.
Yeah.
Do you have security with you?
Yes, and usually when we go, it's probably quick in and out. We don't try to stay too long. But, you know, some of my colleagues who went there, you know, they stayed in the hospital, like Dr. Samer Attar. He's from Northwest, and he's a guy who actually, he's our biggest hero. He stays there for about a month at a time, but he doesn't
leave the
hospital.
This is a Northwestern doctor.
Right.
Leaves work for a month, and he goes over to the Middle East.
Absolutely. The guy was actually named Chicagoan of the Year 2 years ago.
Really?
Right.
What's his name again?
Samer Attar.
Okay.
And he was actually, he received many awards, and actually he was featured in a 60-minute report that talked about the cave hospitals and the protection of hospitals inside Syria.
In studio with us is Dr. Mufaddal Hamadi.
Hamadi.
I'm going to get it before you leave. Hamadi.
Right.
Hamadi.
Yes.
I should know that. I'm Lebanese.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you about that. CNN, NBC, 60 Minutes, they've all done stories on this.
Right.
And they talk about these hospitals that are underground
right.
in Syria. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, let me, first of all, you know, the Syrian war is an example of all the different violations of human rights that you could ever imagine in your life. And one of the biggest violations of human rights and the Geneva Conventions is the targeting of hospitals. That was very sad and very, very difficult to understand, is the weaponization of healthcare, where the government and the Russians who are bombarding, targeting these hospitals understand that it's a life source of many of the people in the area, so mm-hmm. they want to take over. The rebel-held areas, they a lot of times target these hospitals. We were able to document targeting these hospitals on many, many occasions. And most recently, in the recent escalation in the war, when they're trying to take over the last province of Idlib, what we did in March of 2018, we came into the UN OSHA and said, listen, the UN said to us, let's give the exact locations of these hospitals and the GPS locations so we can deconflict them. So that means we're going to provide them to the Russians, we're going to provide them to the government they can avoid them. And as a matter of fact, what happened is we were able to document that 14 facilities were targeted more than once sometimes.
Of course.
After we gave the coordinates of these hospitals. So what we did is we filed a report, and then actually we were able to testify in the UN General, Security Council. And as a result of what we did and other organizations, actually the UN General Secretary Guterres, you know, they just announced a commission of inquiry
mm-hmm.
to look into these violations. Obviously, we don't think that anything is going to come out of it, but I hope that one day, by documenting these violations of human rights and violation of law, that we will be able to bring the perpetrators to justice.
Well,
one day.
If the entire world knows that Assad is killing his own people, shouldn't someone do something about it?
Well, you know, this is the million-dollar question.
Right.
Is, you know,
because you and I know, yeah. Everybody at the UN knows.
But see, this is what the big problem is. We thought we learned from the lessons of history. We did not learn the lessons of history.
Right.
We said never again for, the Holocaust. We said never again for Srebrenica and Bosnia. And it seems to happen again and again and again. And as Einstein's once said, is the war, you know, I'm not worried about, the war will not end by the evil doers, but by the people who watch them do it and do nothing about it.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what's happening today.
I'm going to take a break. The UN met last week and you were out in New York. I want to talk about that. Okay. And I'm going to screw up your name one more time. Dr. Mufaddal Hamadi.
better.
Where can people get more information? The website, sams-usa.net.
Correct.
Everything is on there, including most of the videos, a lot of the videos that you were on TV. Yeah. Sams, SAMS-USA.net. It's 720 WGN. Pete McMurray in the Skyline Studios at 720 WGN. The Syrian American Medical Society, SAMS, is a foundation. They do global relief, and they send doctors over to the Middle East to do anything and everything. And in studio with us is Dr. Mufaddal Hamadi. I feel like I'm really, you know, I should get this.
That sounds good.
You leave for Lebanon on Friday.
Correct.
You're going to be heading over there. The UN met last week. You went to New York. You had some meetings. What happened? What are you hearing?
So, you know, meetings, as you know, last week was a UN General Assembly meeting, and we take that advantage of that meeting to meet with some of important people that are related to our work in Syria. So I met with Ray Burns, the special envoy, the American special envoy to Syria. And, of course, we talked about, you know, the future of humanitarian aid. And most importantly for us is we want to make sure that we have access through the borders to be able to bring in the equipment
and
medications. And not only us, it's much more than us, you know, going through. It's as I said, we support about 40 facilities there. That means we need to bring in medications. We need to bring in our staff, our equipments, all the hospitals we're supporting. We need to have all access to those. So we can bring in everything to support the doctors that are working there, the real heroes that are really risking their lives day in and day out. One thing to keep in mind in Syria, which is something really amazing, the most dangerous place to be in Syria and in the areas outside the government-controlled area is in the hospital. And these doctors there that, you know, we're proud to support are risking their lives day in and day out in order to provide those cares.
When you fly in, how do you get past the checkpoints without getting arrested or killed?
When you need, you know, when you go through the Turkish borders in the north, you actually get a special permit from the Turkish government to get you go through.
Okay.
And then you of course you need to have your local people there that are going to be able to take you where you need to go.
Wow. Man, I mean, I don't know if I could do it. It takes a very strong person. Now, you know, you're Syrian. You want to get back there. You want to help your people. How do you recruit the doctors here in the United States?
Well, it's very easy. Not every doctor from the United States will go inside Syria. Very few, very rare. But most of them that go on medical missions, they go to Jordan, they go to Lebanon or in Turkey. Our list of volunteers, we cannot accommodate everybody. It's amazing how many American colleagues
really
just want to go there
and just help on their own dime.
Yeah, in Lebanon, we had this year, just in Lebanon alone, about 12, 13 missions. You name it, from audiology to ophthalmology to urology to speech therapy. You know, we have no short of volunteers whatsoever.
On your website, sams-usa.net, total medical services provided so far, 2.6 million.
That's correct, yes.
Total number of patients, 1.3 million.
That's
just
right.
From your group. Okay. Major surgeries performed, 126,000. What's a major surgery? You're heading over there.
Well, you're talking about anything from you know, gallbladders to open heart to open your vascular surgery, all those kind of major surgeries.
Yeah. Wow. Babies delivered, 27,550.
That's correct.
That's got to make you happy, delivering a baby. That's easy. Everybody's happy.
It's happy when you're, you know, in Syria, but also it makes you sad because, you know, when I go to Lebanon, this is the seventh year I go to refugee camps in Lebanon. I'm seeing kids now that are 7 years old that were born in refugee camps, that were born in almost in captivity.
Right.
And I look at those kids and I see, you know, those kids have known nothing except that tent, that refugee camp, and they couldn't leave it. They couldn't go anything. They can't get an education. And that's when I what I think is very critical is that last generation. What is the future of this generation for the region and for the world?
Right.
You know, this is the biggest tragedy that is really not foreseen yet, that it's going to be seen down the line, down the future. And the saddest thing you can ever hear is when you ask a 12-year-old boy, what do you want to be when you grow up? And you know what the most common answer I hear?
Oh, it's going to break my heart.
It's nothing.
Oh.
I will be nothing.
Oh, my gosh.
And then that is what, you know, I think the biggest tragedy that is, you know, the people who died, they died. But the people who suffer the most from this war are women and children.
Right.
Women are left behind. They have to raise their families. They have to provide for them. They have to bring in, under extreme circumstances there, you know, and then they have to raise their kids.
Do you see an end game to this? What is the end game? What do you want to get to? I know you're going over there and you're helping people and you're bringing a team of doctors and you're trying to take care of these refugees.
Well, I mean, honestly, you know, for me as a humanitarian, I try to concentrate on saving one life at a time. Honestly, I don't care much
what's going to happen in the future. Really all you can do.
I really hope that one day this killing will stop and maybe people will feel safe again to go back to their country and rebuild their country and build a democratic society where every soul is respected.
But it's the Middle East. This has been going on for thousands of years. Is there ever going to be a resolution?
Well, I don't think it has been going on for thousands of years. The Middle East, as a matter of fact, and some time, was actually the cradle of civilization. You know, a little trivia: the oldest city in the world is Aleppo, 14,000 years. The oldest capital in the world is Damascus, and one of the second oldest city in the world is Byblos in Lebanon. So it's a cradle of civilization. Many civilizations went through the Middle East, including, you know, the prime of the civilization in the world during the Umayyad and Abbasis.
Right.
But that's what happens. That's the human history is full of conflict and violence
right.
and coming here and there. But lately, the Middle East has not been the best place to live, you know, especially after the Arab Spring and the failure of many of the revolution that started there too. But one day I think it will come back and democracy will rule.
Well, when we talk about the Middle East, at least I do, I think about when you talk about Syria, you talk about Lebanon, I see in my head, my mental picture is bombed out buildings and kids walking around with not much of a purpose. Yeah. Paint a picture for me. You said kids are going to school, people are going to work. What's it like? What do you see? Because what we see on TV is just the bombed out
areas.
The
Middle East is a land of controversy, a land of contradictions. You know, take an example of Lebanon. Lebanon is the most contradictory place on earth. You have the super rich and you have the super poor. You have the very liberal, you have the very conservative. You have an alley that has a discotheque and a bar in it, and next to it is a church, and next to it is a mosque. You know, it's a place where you got everything there in Lebanon. But on the other hand, you know, the refugees in Lebanon, and if you're talking about Syrian refugees, Lebanon's population is about 2.5 million. You bring in 1 million refugees to Lebanon. It's a huge, huge, huge burden on their economy and their infrastructure and all that stuff. So
sure.
They don't like the Syrian refugees to be there. So they want them to go back, but they're not ready to go back to their Syria. So they're trying to make their lives as miserable as they can. So, you know, if you're a Syrian refugee there, you live in different camps, or you can live among the population, but even if you live in a camp, to build your tent, you have to rent the land and pay like $200 a month just to be able to put your tent up there.
You're kidding. Right. Who gets the money? Does it go to the government?
They have to work all different kind of, at the very, very low wages. You see children that are 5, 7, or 8, or 9 years old working, you know, just to make like $1 or $2 a day so they can live.
Oh, my
God. The family. So they are in a miserable situation. And then when it comes to health care, healthcare is extremely difficult to get there. UNHCR would cover some of those refugees there, but they cover emergency cases at 80%. So, but if you happen to have a chronic heart disease and you need a stent, and unless you have a heart attack, you're not going to be covered. And even if you were covered, the hospital will not let you in until you pay the 20% ahead of time.
Oh my gosh!
So it is.
So when you go over there, are you taking care of those things? Is Sam's picking up
exactly
that?
Okay. Exactly. This is where we come. We do things that UNHCR wouldn't cover, like cataract surgeries, like cardiac stents or cath.
Right.
We all kind of surgery, anything you can think about.
Scott Pelley did a story on 60 Minutes and won 3 Emmy Awards.
That's correct.
I mean, what an impact!
Yeah, absolutely, and we hope that we can do another more work with CBS down the line, and actually, the most important thing is the story to be told. Honestly, a lot of Americans here, my colleagues, don't really have the good a full picture of what's going on there, and many of my friends, my American colleague friends who go with me on medical missions, I tell you, this is addictive. They become addicts. Many of them have gone 2 or 3 or 4 or 5
right.
times.
Because you want to help.
It's a life-changing experience for them.
I can't imagine. And you're doing God's work. You really are. So you take off tomorrow for Lebanon. How long are you gone?
10 days.
Wow. Yeah. Good for you. I'm so glad we met.
Thank you.
We were connected through
really
a friend.
I really appreciate giving you the opportunity to, first of all, tell the story of what's going on in Syria, tell the story about what we do, and also, speak on behalf of the real heroes, the doctors inside Syria that are providing the health.
Well, when you go to the website, sams-usa.net, all the information's on there, and it is chilling. It really is. But I don't know if I should wish you good luck or God bless, but, keep doing what you're doing, Doctor.
Well, thank you very much for giving me the opportunity. That's more than good enough for me.